Thanks for being with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're going to turn our attention to the 2013, I guess you can say, too. It started in 2012, though, the flu season here in Wisconsin. And a couple of doctors who know a whole lot about it. Nasia Softar, Dr. Softar, is at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health and practices at UW Health with a specialty in infectious diseases. Dr. Softar, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Appreciate it. And Dr. James Conway teaches at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health in the pediatrics division. His area of practice involves infectious diseases in children. And Dr. Conway, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Really appreciate it. You know, we hear the phrase the flu a lot, but what does it cover and what does it not cover?
I think sometimes people, when they say flu, they really mean a whole bunch of viruses that are not necessarily part of the term influenza. So influenza refers to just the influenza virus. But in this season, there's a whole bunch of common cold viruses, parainfluenza, and things like that that are circulating. I think it can be misleading because the vaccine obviously does not cover all those other viruses. So I usually tell my patients when they say the flu to refer to the term influenza and then use a common cold or terms like that for other viruses. Yeah.
And I think you also have to remember, as much as Grandma was right about a lot of things, I think Grandma used the term flu for things that we really think of something very different when we think about influenza. Influenza is really a respiratory virus. I mean, okay. We primarily are worried about pneumonias and things like that. So these ideas of stomach flus and things like that have absolutely nothing to do with the flu that we really need to talk about, which is influenza.
Yeah. How is it transmitted?
It's transmitted from person to person primarily through the respiratory secretions. So that's the reason that everybody's trying to get people to be so careful about where they cough and sneeze and taking care of their hand hygiene and all those kinds of things.
Yeah. And it's the symptoms?
So the usual symptoms are fever is almost always universal. There are some populations where they will get the influenza but not have fever. But by and large, fever is very common. Headache, cough, and sore throat are the big things. Muscle aches with influenza are much more prominent than with other viruses. So if you're looking for a way to distinguish, you know, is this the flu or is this a common cold or something, then muscle aches is a big distinguishing feature.
So if you have, if you're really achy muscles, you're more likely that you've got the flu than...
Correct.
Yeah. I haven't had it for a long time. I was one of those people who, I didn't get flu shots because, and I have friends who are the same way right now who say, well, I've never had the flu, so... I'm afraid if I get a shot, I will get the flu. Well, I didn't think that, but I just sort of never got around to it until I got the flu one year, and I have never missed since.
It's an educational experience when you do get the disease and realize how bad it can be. My wife missed it one year and got the flu, and I don't think has ever missed a year that since.
No, I'm right there at the head of the line when it comes to the flu shots. And I actually just talked to somebody the other day that said, oh, I'm worried about I've never had the flu, so why would I want to get a shot? It might increase the likelihood that I'll get the flu. Is there, Dr. Softar?
No, the influenza vaccine, you know, the shot is a killed virus, so there's no way that can give you influenza. You can certainly coincidentally get other respiratory illnesses, but that has nothing to do with the vaccine. I think when people say, I've never had the flu, they forget that we're all aging. So when my mom turned 65, she said, you know, I've never had the flu. Should I get the vaccine? And I said, well, you've never been 65 before either. So we have to be prepared that as we age, our immune system doesn't respond as well as it used to. So it's better to get the vaccine than to have had the experience of influenza and then get the vaccine.
Yeah,
one thing to remember, I mean, there are a fair number of people that will get a little sore around the area where they got the flu shot.
Yeah.
And, you know, people may get a really sort of mild kind of achy sensation for maybe 24 to 48 hours after they get the vaccine, because the whole idea of the vaccine is stimulating the immune system to think it's had the disease in such a mild fashion that you don't have to go through all the symptoms and all the potential outcomes from it.
Yeah, I was thinking this year it seemed to be the shot seemed to, and some the nurse who gave it to me said, oh, it's going to burn a little more this year than it has in past years. But it wasn't that bad. It, you know, it wasn't a big deal. And as always, I had a little sore shoulder for a day, and that was the end of it.
Yeah, it's right. That's pretty typical. I mean, I think that's what we generally tell most people that they should expect to get from their vaccine.
I want to give a chance for our listeners to join in. You may have a question about the flu or its treatment. Do you get your flu shot every year? Why or why not? Have you had the flu? How severe was it? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at the Larry Mueller Show. Appreciate your input here. Nick in Green Bay, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Last year I got the flu shot. I'm diabetic, and I got so sick from that thing. I had like 103 temperature. They told me I could go up to 104 to go to the ER, and I just won't get it again. It just made me so sick to my stomach. And I'm not allergic to eggs, so I don't know what happened, but I just wanted to die.
What do you think, Dr. Softar?
Well, you know, anybody can get an allergic reaction to a vaccine, but what you're describing doesn't sound like it. There isn't anything infectious in the vaccine that can cause people to fall ill. Now, having said that, you know, there are things that are circulating in the community, and you may have been exposed to something else that had nothing to do with the vaccine, but because it happened at around the same time, you would naturally link it in your mind. I cannot think of a reason why the flu vaccine would have made or would have given you the symptoms that you're describing.
Yeah, Dr. Conway, you're shaking your head in agreement with that.
Yeah, I mean, in almost any circumstance like that, it would have to have been a coincidental thing. They're really, even in the biggest studies where they look at all these potential side effects, that's just not something that's ever been seen.
All right. So there you go, Nick. Thanks for calling. Betsy in River Falls. Hi.
Hi. I'm 70 years old, and I'm allergic to the stuff that the flu vaccine is grown in. Is there something else that I could do except wash my hands and stay away from people and wear garlic around my neck?
Yeah.
Well, good news for you is that there's a lot of people that used to be told not to get vaccinated because of egg allergies. And it turns out with a lot of good study that it really seems that there's a very, very, very small group of people. So over the last couple of years, and you should talk to your physician about this, we've been able to loosen and sort of liberalize the groups of people that can receive the vaccine. And in fact, if you can eat lightly scrambled eggs, if you can eat baked goods and anything like that that has eggs in it, you almost certainly can get the vaccine. And even for people that get hives from eggs, the vaccine has such a small amount of egg protein in it that now we are much more liberally immunizing people that have egg allergies listed. There's a really very small group of people that have severe reactions, what's called anaphylaxis, that shouldn't receive the vaccine.
Okay.
The other good news for you, though, is that in the future years, there's just recently been some new licensed technology where vaccines look like they will be able to be grown in media that does not require eggs. And so that's actually one of the nicest things that's going to happen over the next few years.
Mm. Okay. Can I just put in that the reason I know that is that when I'm like 70 and I used to be tested for tuberculosis, and every time I got the scratch test, it would turn out positive and I'd have to have a chest x-ray. So I can eat eggs. I'm just allergic to the stuff that it's grown in. I can eat eggs fine.
Well, if you can eat eggs, you should. Again, we know a lot more about this, and so I think that over the last couple of years, things have really sort of changed on how we actually feel about people that have even the types of egg allergies that give them hives, like you're describing. So you should talk to somebody about it because I think you might be eligible.
Yeah, go back to your doctor and have a conversation with him or her, Betsy. Appreciate your call very much. Sarah in Madison, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, I have a question. My son has the common cold, but he's scheduled to have a flu shot this week. Should I go ahead and do it?
Yeah, so currently we do allow people who have mild illnesses to go ahead and get vaccinated. Obviously, one of the things we want to avoid is people missing opportunities. And so as long as it's a mild illness like you're describing, he's almost certainly okay. Now, it's up to the provider who's going to give him the vaccine to sort of check him out and make sure that they're comfortable. But in most circumstances, as long as it's not high fevers and a significant illness, you should be okay.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thank you for calling. And Elizabeth in Arlington. Hi.
Hello. I wanted to ask the physicians. I have heard, I believe it was kind of pre-flu season this year, that a study was released that suggests that antiviral prescriptions probably aren't a good idea or aren't necessarily helpful. So I just wanted to see what their thoughts were about that. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Uh-huh. Thank you very much for calling. Dr. Safdar?
Well, I think if you have bona fide influenza, then antiviral treatment does help. It's just that it has to be given promptly and quickly for people to help them. I think the issues come in when you think it's influenza or you're not certain, then there's a lot of people that you would expose to antiviral, but they would get no benefit from it.
I think the other thing you may have also heard about is that it turns out that some of the flu viruses have become resistant to some of the antiviral agents, and so there's a fair number of people who were treated that didn't respond well, and it turns out that the viruses had become resistant. So we've got a little bit more limited armamentarium of potential antiviral drugs that we can use now, and so we need to be a little more careful about using them properly.
And Marion in Crystal Lake, Illinois. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you. I've always gotten flu shots because I work with small children. And I'm curious if the current flu shot, whatever it happens to be, doesn't have all of the strains that people might get. I think last year that was a problem. If you don't have some sort of immunity building up just from all these flu shots for the last 25 years.
That's a really interesting question. So as Dr. Safdar mentioned earlier, there are multiple strains of flu, and the flu shot that people receive each year is based on some really educated guessing that has to happen much earlier in the year, where a bunch of very smart people at WHO and CDC have to sit down and look at what circulated the year before and then what's circulating in the Southern Hemisphere and basically make an educated guess what they think is going to be circulating here in our fall and winter and then put those things into that year's flu vaccine. And obviously there's a lot of time that goes by after those guesses are made in the production process where things can pop up that were unexpected, and we certainly lived with that through the H1N1 outbreak some years ago. And even this year, the H3N2 virus that showed up related to the state fairs and the pig exposures was not something that anybody anticipated and was not included in the vaccine. And then the viruses changed throughout the season so that, unfortunately, they may not be 100% protective.
And we'll be back with our doctors to talk more about the flu in just a couple of minutes. Stay with us. Well, you might be going along just fine, feeling good, and then suddenly it hits you. You start getting really bad aches all over, a fever starts, and you can barely drag yourself out of bed. Sounds like the flu, and if it is, you certainly aren't alone. Millions of people across the country suffer with the flu each and every year. Hi, Larry Mueller here. So happy to have you along today on the Ideas Network. We have two great doctors from UW Health with us this afternoon to explain how we can try to avoid getting the flu and how to treat it if you weren't able to dodge it. And they are very happy to answer your questions. I hope you'll give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. We'd love to hear from you. Stay with us. News coming up next here on the Ideas Network. Seems like winter and flu go together a little more often than we'd like them to, but it's not always easy to tell if it's the flu that you might have or something else, maybe a cold. Larry Mueller here, lucky to have a couple of great medical professionals with us here from the University of Wisconsin. Dr. Nasia Safdar is with the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, practices at UW Health, and has a specialty in infectious diseases. And Dr. Safdar, thank you for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
And Dr. James Conway also teaches at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health in the pediatrics division. His area involves infectious diseases in children. Dr. Conway, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Really appreciate it very much. Lots of questions, lots of callers online. You can join in. There's one open line at 1-800-642-1234. If you have a question about the flu, love to hear from you. Are there places that will give you a flu shot for free? It's a Facebook question from Boyd.
So the county health department system does provide influenza vaccine for children in the Vaccines for Children program, and this year they do have some vaccine available as well for the general public. So those are probably the places to look to for people that are looking for inexpensive or flu for free.
Okay. And Dave in Bagley, we will turn to you now. Hi, Dave. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking me.
Sure.
Just a quick question. Why is flu season in the winter?
It's not necessarily in the winter in all parts of the world. I mean, there are places that are that have temperate and tropical climates, and their influenza is a year-long illness. So it's interesting. I don't think we fully know the answers of why it is such a seasonal illness, but a lot of the cold viruses are seasonal, meaning that winter is a time when they are more predominant than others. But if you recall with the pandemic, that was one of the first clues when influenza cases started occurring in the summer that something was very wrong. So with pandemics, it doesn't seem to respect the seasonality as much as with the regular flu.
Mm. Would it be anything, you know, to do with we're inside more in the winter?
In all likelihood.
Yeah, I mean, people think, I mean, you know, the most important transmission factor is actually children in most communities.
Yeah.
And so if you think about during the school year when we put them all into closed quarters and insist they share and work well with each other, unfortunately they share a lot of things, including diseases.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people think it also has to do with the ambient humidity in the air. As things dry out during winter, it seems to somehow promote these kinds of transmissions.
And it's always fun around the University of Wisconsin, and I'm sure other universities as well. We go through a round of colds and flu and so forth, and everybody, the students scatter to the four corners of the world and bring back all the new things, and we just go through the whole thing again in the second semester.
That is very true.
Very true. Dave, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Bill wonders, if the vaccine is totally dead, how does it really work? Dr. Saftar.
So it's true that there is no alive virus in the vaccine, but there's a lot of antigens in there which are designed to stimulate your body into thinking that it has caught a mild form of the flu, and therefore your body will create antibodies to protect you when you're really exposed to influenza.
I should mention that there is actually another type of flu vaccine, which is the nasal influenza vaccine, primarily for children, which is actually a live attenuated version of the flu virus. In other words, they've been made into sort of ultra wimpy versions of the virus, and they do cause a very robust immune response, and especially in little kids, by giving these kids just a very mild case of sort of just the kind of runny nose part of the flu.
Yeah, we have a 9-year-old, and she had the nasal. Didn't really notice that it affected her too much.
Well, it's pretty benign, and I mean, for kids especially, where you have to struggle with them to try to get them to accept getting an injection, it's really a nice alternative. And like I said, it does seem in many studies to give kids a little bit better immunity than the injectable vaccines.
Rosemary in Eau Claire. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello. I would like to find out if the flu shot that we can get as the walk-ins, like Walgreens, Walmart, wherever you walk in, if that is the same strength as the one that you would get at your physician's office.
Yeah, so we have a lot of great partners now that are willing immunizers out in the communities, and pharmacies have become one of those great partners that are really a valuable part of our team. And there are, as you probably allude to, many versions of the flu vaccine. There's what's called the HD or high dose vaccine that's primarily the best vaccine in most people's minds for the elderly, and that's patients over 65 years of age. There's some newer vaccines that are given intradermally rather than with a long needle into the muscle the way the traditional one was, that are for healthy people in the 19 and above age groups, that seem to work as good as the regular vaccine. So there are a number of different products available, and the pharmacies all seem to stock the same ones that you can get in your physician's office.
Excellent. All right,
thanks. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. I'm thinking about it. I've had shots on campus as part of the campus-wide program. I had a shot, because I missed that once. Last year, I went to Walgreens, the drugstore, and had a shot. And this year, I happened to be in my doctor's office for a checkup and got the shot there. So,
well, we've decided as a society of medical professionals that it's important enough, and there were so many barriers to people being immunized by having to get into very cramped schedules in people's offices, that we needed to do something different. And so school-based clinics and using pharmacists and other organizations to help with these things is the best thing we can do for our patients and their families.
Absolutely. Rhonda in Evansville, Wisconsin. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello. Thanks for having the show.
Sure.
I have a comment and a question. I am a total advocate for the flu shot. In my 30s, I had the flu 3 years in a row, and each year was progressively worse, and the last year that I had it, it almost killed me. So missed like 2.5, almost 3 weeks of work. It was horrible. And then my question is, I don't know if this is true anymore, but I'd heard that the flu shot only lasts a certain amount of time. So when it comes out in September, I don't know, you know, if I get it in September, am I going to be covered for February? So that's my question, and I'll take the answer off air.
All right. Thank you for calling. It's a good question.
So the influenza vaccine, you know, will last through the duration of the flu season easily. So regardless of how early you take it in the season, it will last you for the duration. And in Wisconsin, you know, the season can start as early as October and then last until May even sometimes. So it used to be we would sometimes tell people that maybe you want to delay it for a little bit to make sure it lasts, but that's been shown to no longer be necessary or the case. So you can take it as soon as it's offered, or you can take it as late, but earlier the better.
All right. Larry in Whitewater. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. I recently read an article that said that there was a study on the flu that suggested it was a meta study, and it suggested that certain age groups didn't benefit as strongly, and that the efficacy of the flu shots for people, for seniors, had never been experimentally validated. Not that it wasn't. Do you have any comment?
I think there's a lot of emerging literature about the influenza vaccine, more sophisticated analyses than people have been able to perform before. I think as a vaccine, it's challenging because the influenza virus is constantly changing, and you're constrained by how good the match is between what's circulating in the community and how good the vaccine is as a match to those viruses. So if you look at the vaccine overall, it is one of the only ways we have to protect ourselves against influenza. So I think it has merit there. But it's true that there are probably certain subpopulations and certain years when the vaccine was not as good a match, and therefore when you analyze that subgroup, you will find that it probably did not work as well. As Dr. Conway mentioned earlier, the technology is evolving, so I think that will be a limitation that probably will go away in future years.
Yeah, it was an interesting study. It got a lot of press out of Mike Osterholm's group, and it basically did sort of call into question certain populations in certain years. But I think people need to still recognize that the vaccines have, in fact, been tested, you know, far more than any other product probably that's ever been used, because they've been around for so long and given to such a huge portion of the population. And we know so much about both the safety and how well they work. And he was right to draw attention to the fact that they may not be a perfect tool every year, and yeah, that we, in fact, do need a lot of work. And so that's where a lot of these newer versions of the vaccines are coming, and we anticipate that these improvements will continue over the next couple of years.
Very interesting. Thanks, Larry. Appreciate your call. And by the way, you can join in too if you have a question or comment as we talk about the flu with our two guests today, Dr. Nazia Safdar and Dr. James Conway from the UW. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Dave in Dubuque, Iowa. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the call. A little different beyond the prevention thing. I wondered if the doctors had a recommendation if you absolutely had to fly, which I do tomorrow, and I'm kind of in that sort of like your head is in a vice, that stage of progression. Wondered what they might recommend.
Well, I think, you know, in terms of thinking about infectiousness to other people, you can transmit the influenza virus a day before you become symptomatic and then for 5 to 7 days after you've been, you know, while in the throes of the illness. So from that standpoint, if you're still sick, I'd suggest that traveling is perhaps not the best thing to do.
But if you are going to travel, I mean, it's a courtesy to everybody else to carry as much hand gel as you can get through TSA and to use it on a fairly regular basis. You know, coughing and sneezing, if you can, into your sleeve or into a handkerchief really prevents much of those respiratory secretions from becoming aerosolized and spreading. And then the flip side is for everybody else that's traveling. I mean, I think especially as we get into the holiday season with people traveling so much, everybody needs to be aware that all of those airplanes and trains and all the situations you put yourself in where you're in close quarters with other people are perfect opportunities to pick up these things. So it's the same kind of thing of trying as much as you can to keep your hands clean, keep your hands away from your face is probably one of the most important things. And, you know, be aware of who's around you.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I did actually pick up what I got last week doing some travel, and I do have to travel. But really the question was, as far as the altitude, I have traveled before with like a bad sinus headache, and that can kind of be murder.
Yeah.
Just that was really the kind of the crux of the question.
I mean, you can certainly try some symptomatic relief with some of the over-the-counter things. I mean, some people find some benefits from decongestants and things like that that help sort of get rid of some of the swelling of your mucosa and allow things to flow a little bit more and maybe make it a little bit easier for you to breathe. But it is tough. You know, the old chewing gum and all that as you're going up and down sometimes helps some people as well.
Usually I'm trying to avoid all the people, and so now the shoe's on the other foot.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Good luck, Dave. Thank you for calling. And Courtney in Sharon, Wisconsin. Hello.
Hi. I am a nurse, and I just had a couple of questions, I guess, or clarifications. A lot of times I have a hard time explaining to people over the age of 65 why there's a high-dose flu vaccine, and the inevitable question after that, which I honestly don't know the answer to, is if the elderly need a high-dose influenza vaccine, why isn't it made for everyone?
Well, I think one of the things that happens with normal aging, even if one is completely healthy, is what's called immunosenescence, which is just a decline of the immune system. And with that decline of the immune system comes the inability to respond well to any vaccine, and influenza being a case in point. So a way to get around that would be potentially to offer people a higher dose of the antigen to stimulate their immune system, which is what is in the high-dose influenza vaccine or Fluzone. And it does seem to work in the sense that it allows more antibodies to form in people who are older. Whether that translates into lesser instances of influenza is still under study. But based on that, a lot of us are suggesting that older people should get the high-dose influenza vaccine.
Hmm. Yeah, and going into the future, you know, we do know that there's other populations also where the immune system just isn't as robust as normal people. And so the next wave of studies is going to be looking at some of these newer vaccines to see if they should be also used not only in just the over 65 population, but some of these immune compromised groups.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thank you very much for calling. You can join in too at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We have open lines to get you on pretty quickly. Louise in Holcomb, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a question if you have heard of this type of flu, if in fact it is a flu. I woke up a week ago so dizzy I could not get out of bed. The room was swimming, and I experienced this. No other symptoms except a little nauseous feeling, how you might get when you're dizzy. Lasted about a day and a half to 2 days, but for the entire week, I've been a little weak, and I guess that's how I describe it, weak. So what have you heard of this kind of symptom for the flu?
Hmm.
I don't think I would call it typical. I mean, there are a group of viruses that sometimes affect people's middle ear and can cause a little bit of vertigo as they affect the middle ear, because that's where it dictates how your sense of balance goes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that influenza could be a part of that group of possibilities. It doesn't sound like, from what you're describing, that you're describing much of the other symptoms that we would normally expect for somebody with influenza, but really anything is possible.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've talked to three other people that have experienced the dizziness as well, but they also had other symptoms of throwing up and that kind of thing. So, and I can't get the flu shot, and I missed, you were saying something about allergies. I am allergic to gentamicin and therefore have not been able to get the flu shot. And I didn't hear, did you say there's something else one could do? Or
Well, I mean, most of what you're going to be forced to deal with is to, you know, do the careful hand washing and kind of staying away from sick people. You'd have to discuss with your care provider. There are some vaccines now, since they're made by so many different pharmaceutical companies, that may have different preservatives than gentamicin, and so you may be able to find something that may fit your needs.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. And again, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question for us. Get you on right away. We had an email from Jay who wonders, are people who have had, is it Guillain-Barré?
Guillain-Barré. Yeah.
Guillain-Barré syndrome, are they still warned against getting a flu vaccination?
Yes, if you've had Guillain-Barré, you should not get the flu vaccination.
Although there is some new data that's come out recently. You know, one of the causes of Guillain-Barré can actually be wild-type influenza itself.
Uh-huh.
And so in certain circumstances, if people had another explanation for why they got Guillain-Barré, there is some risk to getting influenza for those people. And so there are some providers who will sit down and have a conversation where the risk of wild-type influenza outweighs the risk of anything potentially being triggered by the flu vaccine. Certainly, if you got Guillain-Barré from the flu vaccination, you should never get it again. And that's a rare but known occurrence that does happen.
And for those who may not be familiar with it, Guillain-Barré is?
It's a paralytic illness where you have weakness of the muscle groups, including your lungs as well and your respiratory musculature.
It's usually that the immune system attacks the nerve system, and it's usually triggered by infections, although some medications can do it as well. And influenza, in fact, itself can be one of those.
And I think we've kind of covered this, but let's. Jim wonders, a Facebook question, why do some vaccines last for years? But the flu doesn't, and I guess it's because, well, you go ahead and answer.
Well, I think it's because the influenza virus is constantly changing. It's one of those viruses that you can't rely on to stay the same, even from season to season.
Whereas in other cases, it does stay the same, and so, yeah.
Yeah, there. I mean, the holy grail of influenza vaccines is if somebody can find one part of the viruses that stay the same all the time and make a vaccine against just that one part. But that's still that holy grail that people are looking for.
And probably going to be a very rich person if you ever find that.
I will do my best.
Oh, man. And now let's say I've got the flu. What do I do? What's the best way to treat it?
Well, you need antiviral treatment, and notwithstanding the resistance that Dr. Conway was mentioning earlier, most of the ones that are circulating now would be susceptible to oseltamivir, which is one of the medications we use for treatment. It is important to get it started early so that you can get the most benefit from it. And the other things, you know, supportive care and anti-fever medications and lots of hydration and not going out into public places where you can infect other people are all very useful
things. All big things. Yeah. Dick in Green Bay has a question. Hi, Dick. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I have some family members who are leaving next week for New Zealand. They're going to spend the winter or their summer there in New Zealand. And they asked if they still needed a flu shot if they were going to be in a summer season in the Southern Hemisphere. And I didn't know the answer.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, the key part is actually the transit and the travel that you're going to be exposed to that probably puts you at the highest risk. But as Dr. Safdar mentioned, you know, although we think about these things as being seasonal and they certainly have the highest incidence during winter months, there is a background rate of sort of low-level activity that happens even in the summer months. And so I would always counsel people that it's better to take some prevention rather than deal with the disease itself.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And again, you mentioned how long we are. How long are we contagious when we have it?
So a day before your symptoms begin and for 5 days after they've started.
So
a week, basically a week.
And typically the flu lasts for?
For about 5-6 days.
About 5-6 days. You feel like you're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
We wish you were dead. And then a recovery. So maybe a week probably when you think of the recovery.
Yeah.
And there's no reason why everybody or almost everybody shouldn't have a flu shot or have the
flu. It's a great statement. I mean, we went from an era where we were only giving it to the high risk populations and then have gradually expanded, partially because we realized that children were really the vector that, you know, that led to most of the community outbreaks. I mean, the attack rates in children that are unvaccinated are as high as 35 to 45% of kids in schools will come down with flu if they're not vaccinated. And to be honest, the most important risk factor for any individual getting flu is having kids in their home or having contact with kids. So we basically gave people the option. They have two things. You can either vaccinate your kids or get rid of your kids. And fortunately, most people are choosing to vaccinate their kids.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. And so I guess the advice is, you haven't had your flu shot, it's still time.
Oh, absolutely. It's never too late. And, you know, in fact, although we had an early start to the season, you know, I think people have been lulled by the fact that the last two seasons have been so mild.
Yeah.
And so you're hearing these reports about it being, you know, a particularly severe season. We don't know that, and we can't know that at this point. We do know that it's a more typical season, and we got a little lucky the last couple of years.
Thanks to both of you. I hope we have a chance to do this again. Appreciate it very much. Our guest today, Dr. Nazia Safdar, teaches at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, specializes in infectious diseases, and Dr. James Conway teaches at UW School of Medicine and Public Health in the preventive pediatrics division, excuse me. And he works, he's involved with infectious diseases in children. Thank you for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network.